Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to RNIB Tech Talk, your regular source of technology, news, reviews and interviews from a blindness and low vision perspective. I'm Dave Williams. And don't forget, of course, we're always keen to get your feedback here at Tech Talk. If you'd like to get in touch, why not drop us an email? It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You're listening to RNIB Tech Talk, and hopefully by now you're starting to get used to our voices. I'm Dave Williams, of course, your host, and joining me, as always, is Callum Stoneman. Hello, Callum, how are you?
All right, Dave, yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah, I'm good.
What have you been up to?
Well, I'll tell you what, from that interview last week about fitness, I've been really getting into the fitness side of things on my Apple Watch, because when I first bought it, I wasn't very interested, so I turned off a lot of the fitness reminders and prompts and notifications, and I've got them going now and getting regular reminders of how lazy I am. So
So are you moving more as a result, do you think?
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, I'm starting to just during the day get up and have a bit of a move around a bit more, because obviously it reminds you to stand each hour, and trying to make sure I get out for just a bit of a walk every day and get it tracked. So yeah.
Now, unless you're concerned that it's all boys on this show, it really isn't. Tasneem Arshad, hello, welcome in, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good to be here as always.
Well, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman, welcome both, and looking forward to another Tech Talk right here on RNIB Connect Radio. Coming up on this edition of RNIB Tech Talk, we'll be speaking with Steve Tyler, the Director of Assistive Technology for Leonard Cheshire, and we're also going to discuss how you can use technology to perhaps save some money on those energy bills. That's all coming up this time on RNIB Tech Talk. Now, if you're anything like me, sometimes when you're using a screen reader and you're, you know, doing these sort of online conferences and windows are making sounds and emails are coming in, the voices, it can all get a bit much. So we hear from Callum Stoneman now, who's demonstrating a handy new feature in JAWS that allows you to split those sounds across the stereo field. So you can have your screen reader on one side. And anyway, let Callum tell you all about it. Here's Callum Stoneman.
This is RNIB Tech Talk, and today I wanted to show you the JAWS sound splitter. So if you're a JAWS user and you spend a lot of time on calls, maybe on Zoom or Teams calls in the workplace, or you join a lot of webinars, but you also want to carry on using your screen reader to maybe get some work done, for example, or navigate your computer or read the chat of the meeting that you're on, this will allow you to split the sound so that you can have JAWS in your left ear, for example, and the Zoom call or the Teams call in your right ear, or the other way around. This is really good because you used to need specific hardware to do this. So, for example, you'd have to have like a splitter and maybe have two different sound cards or two different sets of earphones. Whereas nowadays, this is built into the latest version of JAWS. And the way that you access this, it's in what's called the JAWS layered keystrokes. So it's in the volume layer, and then from that it's in the balance layer, which is new. So what you basically do is press your, navigate to the application that you want to split the sound of. So let's say, for example, it's Zoom. You would get Zoom in focus. You don't necessarily have to be in the call, but you just have Zoom on focus. You then press your JAWS key and space to enter a JAWS command. You would then press the letter V for volume, B for balance, and then you can press the left arrow, which would route JAWS to the left and the call to the right. Or you can press the right arrow, which would route JAWS to the right and the call to the left. And that's all there is to it. And then when you want to put everything central again, you would just do your JAWS key plus space, then V, then B, and then the up arrow. The main use case for this is calls, but it's not just calls. You can use it, let's say, for example, you wanted to listen to music while you got some work done, or an audiobook or a podcast. You can do it that way as well. So let's say you were listening to something in, let's say Spotify, for example. You could get Spotify in focus and then do the same commands again. JAWS keys plus space, V, B, and then one of the arrow keys. And then that would route the music app or the audio app that you were listening to, that would route it to whichever direction you'd set. And then you could just do it that way. Navigate your system with the speech from your screen reader and the audio both in separate ears, just to make life easier. So that's how the feature works. So let's see how it sounds in action. Okay, so I'm now on Zoom, and I've dragged in a friend of mine, Louis Morehouse, to help out with this. Hello.
Hello.
So as you can hear then, Louis is central, and if I navigate around here with Jaws.
Mute currently unmuted. Audio settings button. Mute currently unmuted. Alt plus A button. M.
Both the call and Jaws are coming through both ears. So I'm now going to press... I'm on a laptop here, so in my case, the Jaws key is caps lock. So I'm going to press caps lock space.
Space.
V for volume.
Volume.
B for balance.
Balance.
And then I'm going to press the right arrow.
VB. Jaws is routed to the right.
So now if you're listening in stereo, you'll have heard it say in your right ear, essentially, Jaws is routed to the right. If I tab around.
Audio settings button menu. Start my video. Alt plus V button S.
That's just in the right ear. If Louis, if you say something.
Hello, and if you've got both your headphones on, you'll hear me over here on the left.
Yeah, it's moving around.
Yeah, it's great. Stereo, the wonders of stereo and what you can do with it is really quite fantastic.
And then to put everything central, you just go back into this volume balance layer. So caps lock space.
Space.
V.
Volume. Balance.
B, and then press the up arrow.
VB, balance has been restored for all apps.
It says balance has been restored for all apps, and then it's all central again. So,
and here we are.
There you go.
In the middle.
What do you think to this? I mean, I know you're like me, you're a Mac user most of the time, but, you know, you're a screen reader user. Like, do you like the sound of this?
You know, if you're on a conference call, I think it would it'd be really helpful to be able to, you know, have voiceover. Because the worst thing is when you're on a conference call and you want to be, you know, an email comes in or you get something that you quickly need to kind of deal with discreetly. But you still want to keep an ear on the meeting or whatever it is. And you can't do it because everything's just in the middle and it's all clashing. It'd be good to be able to split things off like that. Because, yeah, you can turn the screen reader speech down. On a Mac, you can obviously do keys to turn voiceover down on its own. But you can't always... I don't know if you could do that on Windows. But it's also... It's just a faff because then you've got to remember to turn it back up again the next time you need to adjust it. And something like this just makes it a lot more straightforward. One ear each.
Yeah, it is really nice. A couple of little caveats with this. Well, just one, really. It doesn't work with wireless earphones. So, for example, a Bluetooth headset. Apparently, there's some technical limitations there where it can't do it. So you've got to be using a wired headset. But to be honest, screen reader users probably will be anyway because of there's always a bit of a lag with wireless. NVDA has this as well. With Jaws, it's built in. With NVDA, it's... an add-on that you've got to download and install. We could do a demo of that as well if listeners want to. But there you go, guys. There's the Jaws sound splitter. Hope you found this useful.
Callum Stoneman there with his demonstration of the new sound splitter feature available in Jaws for Windows. And Callum's with us now. Callum, do you use this every day?
Yeah, I do. I use this and Braille to kind of keep myself focused in meetings and stuff. And it's just that handy thing of if you need to check an email or the meeting, you know, something that's been discussed isn't relevant to you, so you want to get on with some work, or the other way around, if, you know, you need to listen to the meeting, you need to focus and you can't have any distractions, it's nice to just know that they're completely separated out. So you could just take one earphone out, for example, but know that if you need it, it's there in the, you know, the other side.
I mean, massively important that we have multiple tools, particularly in the workplace where you need to be productive and you're dealing with multiple streams of information. I remember the days when we used to have a physical splitter box, you know, if you were on the phone. I don't know if you ever had one of those.
Well, no, I didn't, but I know people who've used them. And I think especially since the whole COVID and now people are working from home and there's a lot more hybrid working, I mean... For me, that would be taking up my entire dining table if I had all this hardware just to split my sound.
Yeah, so good that these features are available now in software. So, yeah, give that a go and let us know how you get on with the Jaws Sound Splitter feature. Callum Stoneman, thanks very much. Steve Tyler is the Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire, and I caught up with Steve, who shared some of the work that the charity does and what his role entails.
Hi, I'm Steve Tyler. I'm Director of Assistive Technology and Transformation at Leonard Cheshire. And for those that don't know, Leonard Cheshire is a pan-disability organisation, operates in 54 countries around the world, but it's got a big footprint in the UK. So we have around 150 services, all types of care services, from nursing home style ones right through to more independent living facilities. And then we run programmes, and the programmes fall into sort of three broad categories: employment, supporting people with disabilities into jobs; education, supporting them through college and university and things like that; and there's a special one on technology, which is all about enabling people to access the world, really, through technology.
Right, so tell us more about that third strand. What does that entail, and what's your involvement with that?
The programs we run on technology are regional and country specific, but they're normally introductory or getting people online engaged with technology to access the web, to do everyday tasks. But it can be everything that a lot of us will know from an RNIB and blind and VI perspective, you know, around accessing TVs, getting access to entertainment systems, doing other stuff online around banking or shopping or whatever. There's normally a reason for people wanting to do it or needing to do it. We've got a range of offerings all around the country to facilitate people doing that. The big, I suppose, difference when you compare it to the kind of service that RNIB might offer in terms of its volunteering service or other support functions is that what I've referred to as bridging technologies in other quarters are a bigger feature. So quite often we've got people with significant communications challenges. So for example, their speech is either significantly impaired or they don't speak at all. Or they might have a mix of speech impairment with some physical challenges or visual challenges. And so all of these, when you sort of put them together, mean very different types of technology. In the end, they're all doing the same thing, but the way in which you control your systems and services, of course, are very different.
So tell us a bit more about some of those programs. What form do they take? Are you delivering training or support or documentation, buyer's guides? Are you advocating in the industry for more accessible products? What kind of format are those various programs taking?
Well, those specific programs tend to be training and support, and we've got a volunteering capability. So there's a sort of troubleshooting, training and support. They're definitely kind of starter packs rather than detailed training for, say, somebody who's in a job situation, for example. They're much more centered around home life, accessing the web, accessing email, writing and all the rest of it. As you might know, though, my role right across the organization is to engage more strategically around making life more accessible. And that's doing all of the stuff that we know and love, you know, working with Microsoft, engaging with Google and with Apple, and making sure that Amazon keeps delivering what it is delivering around accessibility, enhancing the use of technology wherever I can, especially in sort of independent living and white goods access and TV and entertainment access. As you all know, technology now touches all of our lives. We're reliant more and more on accessible products being delivered accessibly. And I guess it's harder and harder these days to find specialists in the field who are steeped in this kind of understanding of what it is to need accessible products being delivered and coming and supporting you doing that. You know, the world has changed over the past 20 or 30 years from a time when there was a big arena called assistive or accessible technology. You know, there were multiple screen readers, multiple braille display manufacturers, multiple optical character recognition suppliers, you know, etc. Now that area has significantly been shrinking.
You mentioned TV earlier.
if I were looking for an accessible TV, is that something that Leonard Cheshire could help me with then?
Yes.
And do I just contact you, or do I need a referral, or how does that work?
So the classic kind of approach would be either you are a service user, so you live in one of our services, or you're engaged with one of our programs. And right up front, the discussion and, if you like, the assessment process, but we run a very a person-centered approach is how we describe it. So it's all about the individual. Either what is it that you want to be able to do? And if you know that, we're going to facilitate you doing it to the best of our ability. And if we can't do that, then we'll act as a gateway to somebody that will. Or if you don't really know what you want to do, we'll introduce you to some of those possibilities and come up with a game plan. And once we've got that game plan, we'll walk through with you in finding optimal solutions for your specific requirements. And that includes everyday life entertainment, how you wash your clothes, what your kitchen design is like, all of that.
If technology is made more accessible for blind and partially sighted people, does that improve the experience for everyone?
Now, you know, David, that I would say absolutely. Born accessible for me is the dream, as it is for a lot of us. If we can build accessibility into everything that we do, then that changes lives for the people that most need it. But actually, as a rule, accessibility, really all it means is best in class design. And people have actually thought about how people use the technology in lots and lots of different ways and in lots of different guises and environments and all the rest of it. So short answer, yes, it makes for a better product. Slightly longer answer, it actually engages with 20% of the world that currently isn't engaged with. You know, in the UK, if you put aside the blindness and partially sighted population, across the piece, there's around 14.4 million people with disabilities. And when you convert that into everyday business language, that actually converts into £250 billion potentially that can be spent by friends and family and supporters of those 14.4 million people. And frankly, if they've got a choice, they tend to want to spend it on the accessible proposition rather than one that's not going to be accessible. So there's a genuine market, there's a genuine need. A lot of the time, what businesses will say and developers will say is it's very difficult to engage with the disability market. Why? Because we all ask for slightly different things. We're all slightly conflicting in terms of what we ask for. You know, the classic one is if you're blind or partially sighted, you tend to want stuff in audio. And of course, audio doesn't work for people with hearing impairments and all the rest of it. So there is complexity, but there are solutions. And it's a case of engaging people enough to want to understand what those solutions are like and how to build their products accessibly.
And we'll return to Steve Tyler, Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire, a little bit later on, and we'll hear more about Steve's personal experience and his interest in accessible technology. You're listening to RNIB Tech Talk with me, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman.
Hello, you're not getting rid of me yet, I'm still here.
And Tasneem Arshad. Don't forget, of course, we're really keen to hear from you here at Tech Talk. Why not drop us an email? The address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We've all been thinking about energy prices a lot more recently. I was informed by my supplier that my monthly bill was going to go up to over £200 a month. So how can technology help us with this problem? Callum Stoneman, you've been looking at this a little bit, and there are devices out there that mean we can get a bit more of a grip on how much energy we're using and able to kind of take back a little bit of control, even if we can't push the prices down too much, but maybe a tiny bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one because I think tech is often seen as the thing that's eating up all the energy, isn't it? You know, with all your gadgets plugged in. But yeah, there are a few little things, you know, things like smart plugs and smart lighting that can help just that little bit, you know, save a few pennies here and there, bring the bills down a little bit gradually over the year.
Yeah, so in our house, we have Hive, you know, it's a hub that connects to the router. And then, of course, there is a thermostat which links to the boiler. And the app is quite accessible. So I can, on my smartphone, go into the app and I can check when the heating is due to come on and when it's due to go off. And, of course, I can reduce the, you know, the temperature a little bit, maybe 1 or 2 degrees can make a big difference sometimes in terms of how much energy is used. And also, if I'm out of the house, I can go into the app and make sure that the heating is switched off and perhaps schedule it to come on, you know, 20 minutes or so before I get home. So I'm not using that heating at times when I don't need it. Of course, you can go further and get smart valves, can't you, for radiators, so you're able to heat particular zones in your house. So if you're working from home, for example, you might choose to just heat the room that you're in rather than having the heating on throughout the house. This smart technology, Callum, smart plugs, smart bulbs, I mean, is it expensive?
It depends what you go for. I mean, I've got a few smart plugs, which I think I paid about £7 or £8 per plug, and I've got 2 or 3 at the minute, so what's that, about £16, £24 ish. So yeah, there's a bit of an initial cost, but it depends what you go for and what you're after. Mine are quite simple, really. I've just got them on things like phone chargers and laptop chargers, you know, so that I can just have them on for 2 or 3 hours, and then that device isn't charging overnight. I can make sure that when I'm not using that charger, it's turned off. And they're only saving tiny amounts, really, but any saving you can is better than nothing. I mean, you can even put these behind, for example, the TV. I mean, I don't know about you, but where my TV is, it's just a maze of cables behind there. You've got the TV, you've got the router, you've got the sound bar, you've got all sorts. So there's no way that I could go behind there and try and turn the TV off. So you could put a smart plug on there and just use the app, or say to your smart speaker, you know, turn off the TV, and then that stops that being left on standby. I mean, according to Ocean Finance, have actually done some research on this, and they say that you could save up to £400 over 2 years by switching to things like this, you know, this sort of smart home technology, which right now is a pretty nice saving overall.
Indeed. And of course, there are smart meters available now. A lot of the energy suppliers are kind of pushing this idea that, you know, we should all get on a smart meter. And there are accessible versions available as well.
There are, yeah. I've got one. You get a little display with your smart meter, and that shows how much energy you're using, and you can view your history on there. And yes, there is a talking version available.
Right. And you've got the talking version.
I have, yeah.
Well, you know where I'm going with this, Callum.
I've got to do a demo now.
You have, absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to hear that here on the Tech Talk. So, if you'd like to record your smart meter and show us how that works, if anybody's kind of thinking about getting one, and what do they need to tell their energy company? You know, it's the talking in-home display, I think, is the thing you need. Is that what you've
it
got?
Is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we look forward to hearing that next week. All right for you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we shall look forward to that. Thank you so much, Cal. Is there anything else we need to know on this subject?
I think it is just worth pointing out that the smart meter on its own doesn't save you energy as such, but it is a really good insight into what devices are using energy, you know. So you could see if you turn on, for example, I don't know, if you turn on the heating, and then you can see from your smart meter that an hour ago you used 2 pence of gas for that hour, now it's gone up to £3. So, you know, you've got that immediate sort of visibility there, and then it's how you work with that makes the difference.
Excellent. Well, we should look forward to hearing that next week here on RNIB Tech Talk. Callum Stoneman, thanks very much. What Three Words is a service that aims to help you accurately identify your location. And we spoke with Chris Sheldrick, one of the founders of What Three Words. Thanks, Chris, for joining us. Can you tell me, in your own words, what Three Words is?
Sure. So WAD3Words is a global address system. We've taken the whole world and we've divided it into 3 meter squares. And there are 57 trillion of those. And we've named each one uniquely with three random words. So something like table, chair, spoon, or coffee, branch, pyramid, so on and so on. And there's enough combinations of three words that you can do that. You can name every 3 meter square in the whole world. And so it's like an address, but it applies to absolutely everywhere. So for places without addresses, whether it can be the beach, the middle of the ocean, or in the middle of a field, it just means that absolutely anywhere you can identify by saying something like table, chair, spoon, which corresponds to a 3 meter square.
How can blind and partially sighted people get started using WAD3Words to improve our independence?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to get familiar with the system. And an easy way to do that is by going to the WAD3Words website or downloading the WAD3Words app. And this is something that we have tried to make as accessible as possible for blind and partially sighted people to use. And really what that means is then just introducing it into the community of people that you would discuss and share locations with. And so just as for anybody else, if you want to arrive at the right place, and that can be for a big building that you might be going to, a lot of places, and we encourage people to give the three-word address for the entrance of that building. Now, where I'm sitting here in London is a great example. I'm right next to the A40 in our office, the A40 flyover, and plenty of deliveries do end up on the A40 flyover and not on our office front door. So if somebody finds the three-word address and then gives it to you, then you're going to find exactly where you're going to. And I know that for blind and partially sighted people, they're particularly keen to find exactly the right entrance first time without having a vague address or location provided.
You're absolutely right, and it is something that we as blind and partially sighted people can relate to. It's usually that last, you know, 10 or 20 meters getting to the door that can be the problem. GPS can give you the confidence that you're on the right street. I was dropped off the other day at a restaurant. Turned out I was at the back of the restaurant, and it took me a while to figure that out with my cane and kind of wander around the block and sort of find the way in. What can venues and event organisers do to utilize WAD3Words to improve access for blind and partially sighted visitors?
So the main thing they can do is list on their websites the three-word addresses for all of the entrances and key points around the site, because I think the notion of there just being an address for somewhere like, I don't know, Wembley Stadium just isn't realistic. And back to my days in the music business, which is why I actually founded WAD3Words, is because we had all sorts of production equipment and really heavy stuff being delivered to all these big sites around the country. And it's incredibly difficult. If anyone's ever lifted a bass guitar amplifier, it's one of the heaviest things known to mankind. And if you're at the wrong gate, it's really, really difficult. Now, for all sorts of reasons now, we're having places like Twickenham Stadium, the Emirates Stadium where Arsenal play, the O2 Arena, and the O2 Arena have specifically put it on their accessibility page, is that they just list out the three-word addresses for, you know, this is car park A, this is car park B, this is the ticket office, with the three words corresponding next to each of them. So it's really simple now. You just go onto that page, you find the exact point on the site that you want, because you always do want an exact point, and then you can just type those three words into the WAD3Words app. Better still, you can now use that with some third-party apps as well. So for example, if you got a taxi there with Addison Lee, Addison Lee's one of the taxi companies in London, where you can actually just type the three words directly into their app, and they will then drop you off at that 3 meter square. So I think, I guess, one half of the battle is getting the venues to provide a three-word address for where you need to be. And then the other half is you can either just use the WAD3Words app to get there, or if one of the products that you use supports us, even better, and you can use it directly with them.
Now, I'm a runner, Chris, and I also like walking in the countryside. And clearly, if I'm up out on the Malvern Hills, that is an area where there aren't many postal addresses to be found. Is WAD3Words suitable for kind of rescue and emergency situations?
Absolutely. So we work with 85% of the UK's emergency services, and that includes police, fire, ambulance, Coast Guard. And what it means is that when you dial 999, if you're in one of those areas, which you most likely are, you can then give the three-word address to the call centre operator if you need help. And if you're somewhere where there's just no address, no postcode, some of the time they might be able to know what kind of region you're in based on your phone, but that's quite unreliable in many cases. And what a three-word address does is it means they can find you exactly to that 3 meter square. And every day we hear stories of ambulances, air ambulances, all sorts of things getting to very remote areas where people have used what three words because it's what was available to them. And so I would highly suggest people to have the app downloaded already on your phone, because it means even if you've got no data, you can get the three-word address from the What Three Words app for your current location. And as long as you can find a way to be able to call the emergency services, then you can give that three-word address to them.
Now, you mentioned the What Three Words website, and of course the What Three Words app has been a great way for people to get started. Now, many of us as blind and partially sighted people, we're already using specialist navigation apps. I'm thinking of things like Good Maps and Microsoft Soundscape and many others. Are you actively promoting the What Three Words API to enable third parties to build in support for What Three Words in their apps?
We absolutely are. We're talking to several of them. We have some integrations into apps like Blind Square, Access Earth, ID, as in EYE-D. We've got a few on our website. So if you go to whatthreewords.com/products, we've got an accessibility category on there, but not the ones that you mentioned. So we're definitely making outreaches to them, but there is no stronger endorsement than people from the blind and partially sighted communities getting in touch with these apps saying it would be great if you incorporated What Three Words. And there's been many occasions with product integrations we have where just one person, an enthusiastic evangelist, can get an entire company to build us in. So yes, anything to help is great, and please do reach out to these kind of companies and let them know if it would be valuable.
And to what extent have you been aware of blind and partially sighted people using What Three Words as the service has kind of evolved?
It was something that we looked at really early on. I can remember, I think it was even on the version one or two of our app when we first came out around 2014 and 2015. We were really keen to make sure that the app was usable by the blind and partially sighted community. I think we'd had a lot of feedback right from our first launch that it could help. And so we thought, well, nothing better than to actually get the app into the hands of people and see how it's used, see what we might be lacking at. And there's been all sorts of product improvements we've made in terms of what happens when you press certain of the buttons, and if it's easy to understand what the buttons do, the menu navigations and things like this. And so there's a lot more that we are doing. There's a roadmap of accessible features coming out. But my understanding is from the people we have in the community today that they're very happy with how What Three Words works today as a tool, and that we've actually spent time looking at how this community will be able to use it.
And you are now developing a relationship with us here at RNIB. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I think it was actually around the same time back then when I first got in touch with Robin Spinks and a few other colleagues. But it's been great to sort of stay in touch over the years. But I think now that What Three Words has reached this level of prevalence in the UK, that Robin and Co. have thought, actually, this is the right time for us to more officially partner, because What Three Words addresses are popping up everywhere. And I think, fairly to us, he'd sort of given us the challenge of getting What Three Words to that level of national adoption so that it just became effortless. And so really with RNIB, it's all about the awareness play of, can we get in any booking confirmation or anywhere that anyone might be going, add a What Three Words address? It's not just for benefit of blindness or partially sighted people, it's for the benefit of everybody. I think everyone wants to get to where they're going rather than be in the wrong place, which is exactly what I thought when I founded the business. And it's 2022, and I think that should be acceptable for everybody. But I think Robin and the team at RNIB think, look, this can be so useful given that the UK has taken to What Three Words so well for so many things. Can we just get this so that on every Contact Us page, anywhere that an address is listed, it's easy to add a What Three Words address, just as you would a postcode or anything else. So can we just turn this into a bit of a movement to get that done? We're also taking very helpful feedback from RNIB about our own website and apps to make product improvements where possible. So we're really grateful to them for that. But I think mainly it's to try and help other products integrate What Three Words and to get three-word addresses listed, which is where we're really grateful for the support.
Yeah, and it's about being robust, I think, for a lot of blind and partially sighted people. You know, we really need tools that we can really lean into that we know are going to be super solid, you know, kind of day after day. And that's really important to have that certainty. And it sounds like you guys are in it for the long haul. Was it 2013, I think, you started?
That's right, 2013 when we started. And there's a few things which I think, I mean, you mentioned it being robust and reliable. I mean, certain ways we built the product, which I think will resonate with the audience as well. The fact that you can just speak the three words was something we spent a lot of time on. And voice recognition is one of those things that is famously bad. It hasn't actually sort of in many ways improved in sort of 10, 15 years plus in terms of just basic recognition. So the way we designed the system so that, for example, when you've got table, chair, spoon in somewhere and table, chair, spoons in somewhere completely different, the system is very good when you speak the three words to it to understand what you actually meant. And for me, I just find it so much easier to grab a phone, press the mic, speak the three words than to type. Or even we have a similar piece of tech when typing that it sort of corrects any typing errors. And this was something that I really struggled with in the days that I was trying to use GPS coordinates. They're a real faff to type in accurately over 16 digits and worse still, try and speak to some kind of voice assistant which is going to know what you're talking about. So I think from how we designed the system, robust is exactly what we wanted. Just very simple, very reliable, and that's what we tend to see. Like, people are only going to use something and keep using it if that's how they find it. And I think that's how What Three Words has taken off. You know, plenty of other people have tried to come up with a global system, but they were always these very complicated long codes that were not much of an improvement over latitude and longitude. And I think just the fact that we're simple and reliable is what's helped us to get to where we are.
Yeah, and you've done some pretty cool things with, you know, homophones,
yep.
Words that sound the same. You've kind of weeded those out. You've put the longer words in the middle of the ocean. So, yeah, pretty cool stuff. And glad to hear there's a sort of bit of error checking in there as well, because I don't know about you, my spelling's awful. So, having that is...
Exactly. Well, the way I sort of put it is, like, it's nice to be able to be lazy when you want to. I'm one of the last BlackBerry users. And so my accuracy of typing is okay, but I really struggle if I'm on a smartphone with no physical keyboard. And so I think it's nice to be able to know you can just be a bit lazy with typing in the three words and it still gets it right. But to your other point, yes. Yeah, the words like here, that of course you could spell H-E-R-E or H-E-A-R, we take those out. And then, yes, in the middle of the ocean, you're more likely to find dodecahedron, cryogenically, pyrotechnics, and in the middle of London, table, chair, spoon, which hopefully makes it easier for everyone because we don't have many users in the Atlantic Ocean.
So final question for you, Chris. What's the future? What are the kind of the frontiers? Are you looking at sort of indoor spaces or other navigation, or are you really kind of laser focused on making What Three Words the best that it can be?
I think we're definitely focused on just What Three Words. We don't intend to get into mapping or navigation tech. That's just not what we do or ever set out to do. But to get What Three Words ingrained into every single bit of hardware and software that we can. So, for example, car navigation systems, we're in, you know, well over 10 of those now, and there's plenty more car brands. We think it's just something that when you buy a new car, you should expect it to have What Three Words in. Some of the delivery apps people have seen, things like DHL, DPD, you can now type your three words into those. And of course, there's many more of those. There's all of the grocery delivery. So we have a team here, and not just in the UK. We have ambitions for worldwide and are already making inroads into several other countries. So really, it's just, you know, keeping it simple. We do What Three Words in 51 languages. So this is not just English only. And we want to keep growing that list so people can use it in their first language. But it's about making it global and accessible in any product where someone would expect to use an address. And really, that is our vision, to make a global standard.
Chris, I imagine you're a super busy guy. Thank you so much for giving up your time and talking with us here at RNIB Tech Talk. Thank you.
Total pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Chris Sheldrick there from What3Words. And I know the team at What3Words are really keen to get your feedback. So if you've tried the app or the website, do let them know what you think, especially regarding the accessibility of the What3Words service from a screen reader or screen magnification perspective. So, Callum Stoneman, you like to get out and about, and so do I. I'm a big fan of the Microsoft Soundscape app, which is a sort of another kind of location-based app, I guess. You can set your own points of interest, beacons, they call them in that app, and it tries to make use of the stereo field in your headphones so that you can hear in a sort of binaural sort of way the direction that things are in. Have you tried any of these location apps?
Yeah, I love Soundscape, and I use it with a head tracking headset as well. So when you've got your beacon, as you mentioned there, you can, as you're turning, you know, it's giving you in real time whether it's straight ahead of you or to the right. And Soundscape is amazing, but it's still GPS, you know, and it still gets you to sort of just about where you need to be. But I did hear about What3Words fairly recently, and I've not had a chance to test it out, but it really does sound incredible. And while that interview was playing there, I was just thinking about there was the odd occasion where I'd need to get a taxi from my university a couple of years ago. And there's a couple of different university buildings that are close to each other, and therefore a couple of different places you could park up. And some of those car parks were a little bit of a distance away, and it was an absolute nightmare. I think it was a nightmare for sighted people, but even more so when you're blind and you can't see where the taxi driver is. You can't really describe where they are or where you are. So I feel like, you know, it used to take me ages to find my taxi. And I feel like if I could have just given them a What3Words address, or they could have given me theirs, and if it really is this accurate, then that could have been a game changer. Well, it still can be a game changer. It sounds like a fantastic service. I'm looking forward to putting it to the test.
Yeah, equally, I agree with you, Callum. I think the What3Words app would be amazing and can really see the benefits for people in general, but also for people with sight loss as well. And I equally have heard about the Soundscapes app and some of the other navigations. And I wonder, Callum, whether you've actually used some of the other sort of navigation apps as well, like Blind Square, and how Soundscape compares with using that. And I'm wondering why Soundscape is your preference.
I think it's to do with that. There's the support for things like head tracking. And I mean, Blind Square is brilliant as well. I love Blind Square, but I think Soundscape gives you more of a feel for things, where Blind Square would just kind of say, oh, this is at 3 o'clock, or this junction is at 6 o'clock. Whereas because Soundscape gives you it in stereo, you know, and you've got certain things will be on the left, certain things will be on the right. And I've noticed as well, I don't know if this is just me, but it seems to do its best to try and kind of put things, certain things behind you as well, if it needs to, or, you know, straight ahead, like central. And it feels like a more real world thing. I don't really know how to explain it, but it just feels, I feel like I've got more knowledge of my surroundings with Soundscape, you know, hearing it in stereo.
Can I ask a question, actually, Callum? What would you say to people who have safety concerns about using a headset while you're out and about? Which headset do you use, and would you say it's for everybody?
It's definitely not for everyone. You've got to be fairly comfortable. I mean, I 100% would not recommend headsets that cover your ears. Definitely not. I wouldn't recommend earbuds. I actually use the Bose Frames. But the only problem with that is that the support for head tracking isn't officially supported anymore. It still works in Soundscape for now. How long that's going to last, I'm not entirely sure. But they are basically a pair of sunglasses, and the sound comes out from kind of the arm. So they're not quite in your ears, so you can still hear everything that's around you. But I think the Sony Linkbuds are kind of the modern replacement, in terms of they will keep your ears free and also support the head tracking so that Soundscape can get a better idea of where you are. Other than that, I think bone conduction headphones are the way to go, and Aftershocks are very popular for those.
Yeah, I was just about to mention the Aftershocks, actually, because I was aware that they're very popular and people use those out and about as well. So it would be really good to hear your views on which apps you use when you're out and about. So please do email in your thoughts and reflections on your experiences on using navigation apps.
We now return to Steve Tyler, Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire. We hear about Steve's early career in psychology and some of the technology that's had the biggest impact on his life.
Now, you're the Director of Technology and Transformation at Leonard Cheshire, and you're also blind yourself. How did you get where you are, Steve?
That's a really interesting question. My background formally is in psychology, so my plan was to become a clinical psychologist. I had a lot of pushback around even getting onto a course because lots of people thought it would be impossible for a blind person to do it, and they kept throwing things in the way of that. And of course, I ploughed on, nearly giving up, but in my final interview, which we were encouraged to do, went to university, and the university right at the last, right at the end of the queue, were the ones who welcomed me with open arms. It was such a shock. I began to think, you know, is it something that they don't understand rather than the rest? Because everybody else had said it was all impossible. Did the course, engaged, started training, became an assistant psychologist. At that time, though, two really spectacularly interesting things happened. One was the web was beginning to be born. There was this kind of crazy idea that you could log on to this thing called the internet or the World Wide Web, and it didn't matter where you were in the world, that this would be available to everybody, that you could find information, you could begin to access libraries of material, you could do all sorts of things with it. And that was amazingly exciting. And at the same time, the research team that I was part of in my department at university were engaged in this newfangled thing called artificial intelligence. And it was this kind of great, again, very exciting at that time, because it was all very new and people were not really sure quite what this meant. But the basic idea was, you know, making machines cleverer. And could the computer geeks learn from psychologists about, you know, how the brain worked, and could they somehow make that happen in computer territory? And then psychologists were equally interested, you know, were there models the computer technologists were focusing on, and could that help them understand how the brain worked? And so there was this amazing kind of time, but I became really obsessed with the whole, I suppose, the power of technology. And I began to realize in a very basic way at the time, because I don't think I could have easily talked about it then, but I began to realize that if we didn't get a handle on this and we didn't really engage with it, that we could very seriously be missing some boats. And that really was the beginning. That was how I began to realize this was enormous stuff. And it would change the world. We didn't really quite know how, and we speculated a lot about what could be. And we were very, very ambitious, over-ambitious. You know, the internet, you know, we were talking a matter of a few years and it would be this spectacular thing. And of course, you know, it's still developing. And a lot of the things we talked about then as being glints in our eye, I suppose, are still not here now. Some of them are here in bits and pieces, but you know, there's still a way to go. And the internet, unfortunately, is not available to everybody, and it has turned into a very different beast from the original idea, which was it was free to everyone. It was going to be this amazing place where everybody could share and enjoy, you know, and be, it was all very kind of driven by a very hippified view of the world about how technology could work for us, and we would all access everything and the world would be a better place.
How did you get to where you are?
There was a project. I was broke as a student, and it was a 9-month project at RNIB, and I went and did it. Interestingly, the challenge on the table from RNIB was there is this scheme that a lot of your audience might know about called Access to Work. Still alive and well, very different then, very new. And at the time, there was a budget attached to Access to Work, but everybody knew what the budget was. Over a five-year period, the budget was £20,000. And what was beginning to happen was, surprisingly, the costs of a suite of technology that would be assessed for and then paid for by Access to Work would mysteriously come very, very close to, you know, it'll be £19,995. And the question on the table was, well, what's going on? Are we all being taken for a ride? Are people making lots of money out of the disability lobby and organisations like RNIB, etc.? And should RNIB intervene in this or what? So that was the very first piece of work I did, and then I started working for it. I started work in the transcription department because that was a full-time job, but I started training people in the use of technology, and at the time it was really very new and very different, and visually impaired people that worked for RNIB and blind people that worked for RNIB for the first time were able to engage with some of this technology in their everyday jobs. Up until then, you know, if you worked in something like the transcription team, this was unheard of. You know, blind people would be proofreaders, and as a proofreader, you would be given hard copy print and expected to see whether the braille was okay. And it would be, you know, you'd work with a copy holder, and a copy holder would read the print, and you'd read the braille, and you'd see whether or not there were errors and so on. In the new order, you could do it all yourself. Then I moved into management, became responsible for learning and employment, product and publications, and I began to realise that influencing the world was really what it should be all about. So it was important, of course, to make sure that products and publications and library services, etc., were available to facilitate people. But influencing companies to make stuff that was accessible was critical. So I set up things like, well, what is now a consultancy service. I looked after the business-to-business service and grew that. Worked on lots and lots of initiatives, you know, from DAISY and the new order of online services, publishing, digital TV, a whole host of different types of technologies, and everyday things as well, like the pharmaceutical project in Europe that we brought about, you know, Braille on packaging, and making banking systems accessible, you know, the ATM accessibility. And all of this was adding to this mix of stuff, which was about, what are the business arguments? How can we convince people so that you didn't need Steve Tyler's, Dave Williams, people like us banging on all the time about this stuff? How could you make this stick? How could you make it that it made sense to people such that businesses would automatically want to make things accessible? A, because there was money in it, there was a real market. B, it was the right thing to do, that actually it made a better product for everybody. And that was, and that still is, my agenda, I suppose. That's what I do now.
What technology has made the biggest impact in your life?
Well, computers, computing of every kind. I suppose if I were to single one thing out, your listeners will be astonished. Maybe I am when I think about it still. I remember having arguments when the mobile world still was not accessible. And I remember having arguments with people like Nokia and so on who were less than keen on supporting. In fact, they downright blocked accessibility. They didn't want any of that. Too difficult, too complicated, didn't really get it. And, you know, why bother? There was this amazing, thriving, growing market, and they had easily enough to do. Thank you very much. Do go away, RNIB. And I remember becoming really incensed by that, because one of my theories at the time was that there are two ways of tackling accessibility, it seems to me. One is you take every single manufacturer and every single device and make it accessible. That's really hard, because there are so many. I mean, there are hundreds and thousands of devices and products and manufacturers and people you've got to engage with. So that, but that is one, that's one angle. And there are ways of doing that. There are ways of improving it. Life has become easier to do that now that there is Android and other platforms, you know, driving some of these things. But anyway, very difficult to do. The other route, and this is the route I adopted, I suppose, at the beginning, was this theory starts from the notion that the thing that you carry about in your pocket would, yes, be a communication device, and you'd be able to talk to people and text people and all of that, but actually it's likely to be the device that can control the world around you as well, or identify you as a person, or allow you to pay for things. And if that idea came true, then it was imperative that we made mobile phones accessible. So that became my obsession. And I suppose in answer to your question, that is the single biggest breakthrough, I would say, that has impacted my life. I didn't see exactly where it would be going. I didn't know it would be Apple versus Android. I didn't know it would be touchscreen. But I knew it would be big. And if we played our cards right, it would be one of the key mechanisms that would allow us to control the environment around us and control entertainment systems, control heating systems, make payments, buy tickets, all of these types of things. And a lot of that has come about, and a lot of that is still too damn difficult, but there is progress, and that probably is the single thing that's impacted me.
Steve Tyler, this has been fascinating, and I do hope you will join us again. Steve Tyler, Director of Technology and Transformation at Leonard Cheshire, thank you.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for this time on RNIB Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. It's been great to have you with us. And thank you to Callum Stoneman. Appreciate your company, sir.
Thank you.
And Tasneem Arshad, good to have you with us always.
Thank you. Bye for now.
And tune in next time when we'll be hearing that smart meter review with Callum, and we will be meeting the newest member of RNIB's Technology for Life team, Colin Shales. That's all coming up next time here on RNIB Tech Talk. Oh, and if you'd like to get in touch and you've got a suggestion of something you'd like us to look at here on the programme, then do email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Until next time, from me, Dave Williams, and all the team, bye for now.